Good morning, and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday morning here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths which are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to understand what is occurring behind these headlines and how these events that they depict will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we will turn to Yahweh's Torah, to his covenant, and engage with him using reason as opposed to religion. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in our conversation this morning over the next 2 hours, is toll free, 877-300-7645. I think most people have been following the story. It's a real tragedy that it took place in Bangladesh. Initially, it was reported that as many as 300 women may have been killed. Then it was 400, and just over the weekend, it jumped to over 600. The saddest thing, of course, about the situation in Bangladesh is that the women were ordered by men to show up. It was obvious that the building was on its last leg. As a matter of fact, in just the days prior to the collapse of the building, a number of the women noticed that the building had shown signs of very large cracks, and that it was on the edge of collapsing. And yet, men, because this is an Islamic country, were in a position to order the women inside, regardless of the fact that it was unsafe. And the workers, they were almost exclusively women. Yeah, there were some supervisors that were men, but they were just to crack the whip. In an Islamic country, women are essentially slaves. They have no rights. And, you know, historically, in a culture that used and embraced slavery, which was most countries around the world until really the last 100 or so years, slaves were looked at as an asset. They were only treated horribly if they failed to do the work that was ordered for them. Now, I'm not in any way saying that slavery is a good thing. It's a horrible thing. But in the Islamic world, it's not just that women are treated as slaves. It's they're constantly demeaned. Their lives have no value. And yet, what's also fascinating about Islam is that women are almost universally its leading propagandist. It's like the Patty Hearst deal in the Stockholm Syndrome, where they are beaten to the point where they actually, when they're shown the least bit of mercy, a relief in the beating, they view their oppressors, this would be Islamic men, as being somehow noble and kind, and they not only speak on their behalf, they force their own sons and daughters into the same horrible system. Well, the disaster that took place Wednesday a week ago reinforced attention on the Western, what they call high street brands in Europe, while Bangladesh is the source of the vast majority now of apparel. It's moved from China to Bangladesh because they're paying these women just a shade over $1 a day to work 10 to 12 hours a day in horrible conditions. And so the fine apparel that you would go to a department store and pay several hundred dollars for a dress, the person making that dress was paid just slightly more than a dollar a day. The various agencies now have said, you know, we told the owners to keep it closed, but, you know, this is all in hindsight. The fact is that the deaths of these workers could have been avoided if Islam was not the driving force in Bangladesh, but it is. The reality here is that of the 3.6 million people who work in Bangladesh's garment industry, 100% of them are Muslim. The country is 90% Islamic, 10% Hindu. The Hindus, of course, are treated like trash. And the country is sort of a part of what used to be India, and then the Muslims in India said that, you know, we can't live with Hindus, we can't live with any other religion, you know, our God won't tolerate any other religion. And so the Pakistanis violently split, and then there was the Bangladesh Muslims then split from them. It is a... It's a horrible situation, and it is all a direct result of the Islamic religion. Now, that's not to say that tragedies don't happen in other countries, but you don't have 600 women killed in a sweatshop while making just over a dollar a day and ordered to go in and having no ability to refuse that order in any other country. Pope Francis, wanting to pretend like Islam and Catholicism are one and the same, now it's true, they do serve the same Lord, speaking at a mass made reference to the building collapse and called it the exploitation of slave labor. His quote was, not paying a just wage, not providing work, focusing exclusively on the balance books and on financial statements. Boy, he can't speak very well. Only looking at making a personal profit. That goes against God! Exclamation point. He was quoted. Well, if that goes against God, if slave labor, if not providing a just wage, if not providing, well, here they were providing work, so you just... The man can't speak. He's not very smart, evidently. If these things on balancing books, by the way, if you don't balance your books, then you are spending more than you take in. That's the very thing that is bankrupting nations. If these things go against God, then the Roman Catholic Church has been against God for a very long time. During the time that the Roman Catholic Church held sway over Europe, it was feudal Europe. There were lords and there were serfs, and the serfs were treated as slaves. They had no rights. And so if this goes against God, and it does, it is treating people as property as opposed to valued souls, is grotesquely inappropriate. But for a Roman Catholic leader to condemn it as ungodly, why don't they just hold up a mirror and say, we are ungodly? When we had the opportunity to treat people like trash, to enslave them, we did. Today, as we look at as what happened there, the Bangladeshis are responding the same way that Americans respond, that they always look for a singular culprit. In this case, they're looking for the wanting to hang the owner of the building, as opposed to looking at the real source of the problem, which is a religion that would enslave women and maltreat them in this way, as opposed to a religion that would create a economic condition in a country where people would have to work for a dollar a day. That is the real culprit here. And yet no one wants to look at that. As a matter of fact, showing the Islamic connection here, clashes over the weekend erupted all over Bangladesh with the Islamists, according to the reporters, protesters, in the Bangladesh capital of Dhaka, having left several people dead and 60 riddled with bullet holes. Up to half a million protesters gathered in the city. Half a million protesters. Now, were the protesters rising up against and on behalf of women's rights and to say, boy, we can't have a situation where 600 women are killed because they're treated like slaves? No. In fact, they were rioting on exactly the opposite standard. They were rioting because they want total separation between men and women. They want men to be treated as vastly superior to women. They don't like any move that would give women any rights. The protesters were Hefajet-e-Islam. They blocked the highways. They set fire to shops. They torched vehicles. They shot guns at any who would stand in their way. They're also calling for those who insult Islam to face the death penalty. Here are people acting like morons. Here are people acting savagely. They're acting savagely. They're demeaning women. They are killing. They are destroying. They are just being absolute, complete, worthless individuals. Counterproductive in every possible way. And what they want is rather than to say, hey, wait a minute, your whole perspective, your attitude here is completely wrong. They want anyone who says that they're wrong killed. Imagine that. What they want is anyone who would insult Islam to say that Islam is responsible for the deaths of these 600 women, that Islam is responsible for the rage of these riots. Islam is responsible for these Muslims torching stores, torching cars, destroying property, killing people. They want anyone who tells them the truth killed. They also, the article says, want greater segregation between men and women, as well as the imposition of stricter Islamic education, which means that women would receive no opportunity whatsoever to be educated. And it means that the only thing that people would be told are those things that can be derived from the Quran and Hadith, which would therefore make rape something noble and good, kidnapping noble and good, murder noble and good, terrorism noble and good. That is what they want taught, and they want anyone who would say those things aren't noble and good killed. It is the consequence of Islam. It is why we must oppose it. Shattering Mess. I'm your host, Yada. You can join this conversation by calling 1-877-300-7645. This riot that was manufactured, and it was specifically designed to be a riotous protest by Hefajet-e-Islam. The thing that is interesting about them is that their primary focus, and they're a derivative of the Islamic group Jamaat-e-Islami. They were formed back, a fairly new group, about 3 years ago, January of 2010. And they are equal parts political and religious. They receive all of their strength, if you will. They draw their strength from the country's madrasas, which would be their religious school. So they're fundamentalists. That their primary mission is to fight against any rights for women. It's not that they're fighting against equal rights for women. They're fighting against women having any rights whatsoever. So here in the immediate aftermath of a disaster that kills 600 women because the women had no rights, this Islamic group decides that they would stir up a protest of 500,000 people to protest giving women any rights. Imagine a country like that. Imagine a religion like that. Well, I guess we're going to have a difficult time trying to understand the religion because they were chanting Allahu Akbar. And the writer of this article put in parentheses, that means God is greatest. Now, I've seen more times than I'd like to count. Allahu Akbar errantly translated God is great. And where they get both Allahu and Akbar wrong. But at least God is great is a sensible saying, even though it's an errant translation. God is greatest is an accurate translation of Akbar. It is either greatest or most great. It's a superlative of great. That's accurate. But if you then inaccurately translate Allah as God as opposed to transliterate it as the Islamic God's name, then it becomes, well, half right. It's just moronic. How it says God is greatest is what they have here. God is greatest. Well, who's God in competition with? If you have God is singular and you don't name the God, how can the singular God, unnamed, be greatest? I mean, you'd think that to write for a major periodical, and the articles that I clip are from the New York Times, the BBC, Reuters, I mean, they're the Los Angeles Times, these are from the world's leading publications. And the idiot that wrote this can't figure out that, no, God is greatest cannot be what Allahu Akbar means. He's not even smart enough to look at A-L-L-A-H-U to figure out, wait a minute, that's Allah is. Now, the reason that this is important, if you can't replicate the words accurately, if you don't know what they mean when people are confessing to their crime, you've got a 0% possibility of understanding what's happening or how to oppose it. Allahu Akbar tells you everything you need to know about Islam. It is the Islamic prayer of fear. They're screaming, Allah is greatest, because they want women to remain in fear. It is the Islamic prayer of fear. It is the Islamic slogan that is shouted every time Muslims do something heinous on behalf of their God. The Islamic God's name is Allah. The whole concept of Islam, the nature of Islam, is that Allah claims to be greater than Yahweh. That's how it was first used at the Kaaba raid. When Muhammad, after he had lied about his willingness to stop being a terrorist for 10 years and stop kidnapping and attacking and robbing and murdering the Meccans, his militants were up in arms with bloodlust and booty, thoughts of booty dancing in their head. And so he decided that on the way back home, rather than letting his militants savage him, that they would let them savage the Jews in Kaaba. And when they raided them, this farming community, that the Islamic prayer of fear was first pronounced. And it was, Allahu Akbar, Allah is greater than the God of the Jews, Yahweh. It tells you that Allah is Satan. That's who Allah was modeled after. They said that they have one demand, one point. Atheists must be hanged. Anyone that would agree with them, disagree with them, must be killed. It is Allah's cause, jihad. Shattering Miss, I'm your host, Yada. We're reviewing what happened in Bangladesh, and it was two of the interesting fallouts. Is first, you've got 600 women killed in Bangladesh because they were treated as slaves and forced to work in a building that they knew was on the brink of collapse. The cracks in the building had been brought to the attention of the owners of the building. When the women refused to go in, they were forced to go to work. They were paid about $1 a day. And then the Pope comes out and he speaks against slave labor, even though the Roman Catholic Church was more responsible for enslaving the masses than any other institution, probably in European history. And then you have a protest, a 500,000 people strong in the capital of Bangladesh, not trying to protest in favor of women having some rights in the wake of this horrible killing of 600 women, but no, to make certain that women receive no rights. The Hafez-e-Islam terrorist group is not only fundamentalist, they've grown directly out of madrasas, but their primary goal is that they want Bangladesh to be like Saudi Arabia, where women not only can't work, that women cannot leave their homes without a male escort. They can't drive a car. They can't leave the country. They can't even go to the store without a male escort who is either their husband or their father or an adult child, male. Otherwise, they can't leave. And even if they do leave with one of those individuals, they have to wear the full burqa. And so what they want in Bangladesh is the same thing. They want to make certain that women cannot go to school, that they cannot hold a job, that they cannot leave their homes, so that women become the prisoners of men. There were, in this particular riot, the center of the riot was a mosque that was turned into the battleground. The aim of the protest was to force the implementation of their 13-point demand, all of which even this journalist recognized was inspired by the Quran. The group says that they want anyone who would reject them, anyone who would oppose them, anyone who would speak against their savagery, murdered. Turning to another sad story regarding Islam and our willingness to embrace it. The Boston Marathon bomber's family, you know, we reported that they received welfare, but they were paid more than $100,000 in welfare. The benefits included, of course, food stamps and Section 8 housing and stipends, the report said. It's also interesting that the wife of Tamerlane, who still goes around wearing her Islamic garb, claims that she knew nothing about any of this, even though in their postage stamp sized apartment is where these bombs were made, where there were all of a sudden this whole assortment of pressure cookers, all of a sudden tacks and BBs, all of a sudden all sorts of explosives, much of which came from them emptying out fireworks. And these bombs were being built in her kitchen, in her postage stamp apartment, and she didn't have a clue what they were doing. Imagine that. Also, speaking of Islam causing people to behave badly, the college friends, also from Kazakhstan, threw away the Shanarev's laptop, as well as they threw away some of the fireworks that they had unloaded to create the bombs. And when one of the Muslims that was a fellow student said that he recognized their picture from the FBI video and sent either Jokar or Tamerlane the text, all Tamerlane or Jokar sent back was, laugh out loud, isn't that funny? Armed protests now in Libya. This is another example of why the world should not be tolerating Islam. While Islam is the greatest curse in the world today, armed protesters targeting Libya's ministries and media in the capital have alarmed international observers who say that deteriorating security conditions are becoming a matter of serious concern. Yes, we turned what was a secular dictatorship in Libya one that was somewhat harmless at this point because it was run by a licentious syphilitic, into a state now run by jihadists. Reporters Without Borders said there was great cause for grave concern about the recent and violent attacks on journalists in Libya, whose safety conditions are deteriorating drastically. And yet, the United States and Europe empowered this transition. Gunmen in heavily armed vehicles remained in control of Libya's foreign ministry for a fourth day in a row, as they surrounded every target, including the media, that they wanted control. Those guns, of course, were supplied by the United States through Qatar. Turning again to the effects of Islam, Reuters is reporting that three British Islamists were jailed on Friday for planning mass suicide attacks that had the blessing, they say, of Al-Qaeda, as if the blessing of Al-Qaeda were A, possible, and B, meaningful, which prosecutors said would have been as deadly as the 2005 London bombings. Gee, what do you think that all of the Islamic jihadists and Islamic suicide bombers and Islamic terrorists have in common? I know if you were reading a newspaper, you would say Al-Qaeda was the one thing that the Islamic terrorists, the Islamic jihadists, the Islamic suicide bombers have in common. Perhaps it might be Islam. With the help of others, the three plotters had intended to detonate eight rucksack bombs. That would be backpack bombs, identical, of course, to what happened in Boston, in a mass attack, and possibly use timers to set off other devices in crowded places. They were going to do exactly the same thing that was done in Boston. They'd also considered wielding knife blades also putting knife edges on the front of trucks and using the trucks with knives welded onto the bumper to ram into crowds of civilians. All in the name of their God, Allahu Akbar. They said that the targets remained identified. The intent was to create an attack more devastating than the four suicide bombers on London's transports in 2005, which killed 52 people. Had perpetrated. They had been sentenced last week in the courts in London. The judge said clearly nothing was going to stop you short of intervention by the authorities. The judge went on to say, I have no doubt that you would have continued your plan, but for that intervention, many deaths were planned by a determined team of individuals who were fully radicalized by you, Nassar, he told the leader, radicalized. Again, they weren't acting as fundamentalist Muslims. They were just radicalized by Nasir. One individual responsible, not Muhammad, not Islam. Nasir, who the judge says was a skillful bomb maker, was jailed for life. When sentencing him, the judge took into account that he had been found to be in the bottom 2 to 5% in terms of cognitive ability. So this person, who was dumber than 98% of the world, was the source of radicalization, the source of skillful bomb making. Khalid, who boasted that he would plan another attack, was given 23 years in custody. Your plot had the blessing of Al-Qaeda, the man whose intelligence is not at the lowest 98 percentile, said you intended further aims of Al-Qaeda. Why is it that even this judge is motivated to speak on behalf of an organization that for all practical purposes is irrelevant? What is it, even in the judicial system, where evidence and reason are supposed to prevail, that he is incapable of recognizing, the only rational connection here is that these were all Muslims? Also now, as we turn to Islam causing people to act badly, the testimony now from the victims of the Syrian conflict have affirmed that the nerve agent sarin was indeed used, according to United Nations investigators. No question about it. Sarin gas has been used. However, it was not used by the government forces. It was used by the rebels. Now what do you do, Mr. President? You have said that the use of chemical weapons would be a red line, that the United States would not tolerate that. And now you find out that it was used. Chemical and biological weapons were deployed. But they were deployed by the side you're supporting. Now what? Is it time to recognize that the problem here is Islam once again? That the side you are supporting are fundamentalist Muslims, and if they prevail, the carnage will be unimaginable. Now what, Mr. President? Turning to another expression of Islam, this far, far and away, this in the region of China that is borders the Caucasus. CNN is reporting the clashes in the unsettled western Chinese region of Xinjiang caused 21 people to die. Local officials visiting the homes, this report from CNN says, now you imagine, you've got a communist government, and the communist government were visiting the homes. They weren't raiding the homes. They weren't ransacking the homes. They weren't searching the homes. They were just visiting the homes. And in the process of doing their visits, they found several suspicious persons. And the more they visited, the more weapons they found, which were knives in the case. I'm your host, Hiyala. We're covering the influence of Islam, all negative around the world. This story is from the opposite side of the world, from the furthest west that you can go in China, right near the Afghan border. The visitors from the government that went into the homes recovered knives, many of which were more than a meter long, according to a spokesperson for the government. She told CNN that the captured assailants said under interrogation, why would it be interrogation? I thought they were just visiting, that they had found that these knife makers had watched videos. The videos were from overseas. Now, China is connected to, of course, part of Asia. It's connected to the Middle East. It's connected to Europe. It's connected even to Africa. The only place that would really be overseas from China would be the Americas. Otherwise, the entire landmass is connected. So who knows what they mean by the videos were from overseas. So, you know, in American parlance, this would be foreign-inspired terrorism. That they had watched these videos from overseas that featured violence and acts of terrorism. Then they made those large lethal knives and wanted to use them for jihad. Capital J. Jihad, not lowercase jihad, but capital J jihad, making it a title or a name. She said, referring to, now this is the the CNN writer here. She said, referring to the Arabic term meaning struggle, in quotes. Now, if jihad were just a standard Arabic term and it meant struggle, it would not be capitalized. You capitalize titles and names. You do not capitalize common words. And second, she was just told that these videos on jihad were using knives in featured violent acts of terrorism. And from that she gets struggle. Now, the Quran defines jihad as fighting in Allah's cause. With full arms and weaponry. It's killing in Islam. That is what jihad represents. And yet this idiot writing this article, after capitalizing jihad and saying that they created lethal knives after watching violent acts of terrorism, says, oh, it means struggle. They've been training to use these knives in their own house for several months, and they were affected by extremism, and they hope to commit themselves to jihad. Extremism, not fundamentalism. They weren't committed to Islam. They weren't affected by Islam. No, they were affected by extremism. Why? Because CNN wants the enemy to be extremism, because they view themselves as the answer to extremism because they're tolerant and accepting. Xinjiang has been hit by periodic bouts of unrest. Terrorism would be a better term. The worst violence took place in July 2009 when rioting between the Uyghurs and the Han Chinese left over 200 people dead and 1,700 mutilated. The Uyghurs are predominantly, what do you think, Boy Scouts? No, Girl Scouts. No, they're Mormons. No, the Uyghurs are predominantly Baptists. No, the Uyghurs are primarily Buddhists. No, they are predominantly Muslim. They're Muslims from Turkey who are linguistically and culturally and religiously distinct from Chinese majority Han population. And yet we still can't make the connection to Islam. Speaking of the ill effect of Islam, Reuters is reporting that Afghan President Hamid Karzai met Pakistani's army chief and foreign minister in talks on Wednesday, hosted by the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, aimed at easing tensions between the neighbors before the end of the NATO's Afghanistan combat mission. Now, this is, of course, quite interesting because yesterday, President Hamid Karzai told the Taliban that rather than killing Afghanis, rather than waging their war against Afghanis, what they ought to be doing is killing the enemies of Afghanistan, which he inferred were Pakistan and the United States. So here's Hamid Karzai meeting with the Pakistanis and then telling the Taliban over the weekend that they ought to use their weapons against the real enemies of the Afghan people, Pakistan and the United States. And we made all this possible by spilling our blood and our coin in this Islamic nation. We'll be back after the commercial break.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free...